You're listening to Marketplace Weekend from APM. I'm Lizzie O'Leary. All right, now let's talk about some of the other economic stories going on. And it's Labor Day weekend, so let's have brunch. We are out having brunch at the Pullman Kitchen on 2nd Avenue, and I am joined by Jessica Pressler from New York Magazine and Ben Walsh from Reuters. Welcome to both of you.
Hi.
Hi.
I want to start with the nature of work. It's a big topic, but it's Labor Day weekend, and we're sort of thinking about the idea of work in America and how it's changed. And I feel like it is a profoundly different thing 5-6 years after the financial crisis than it was in those really scary days when people were losing jobs every day. Now it feels really different.
Now it's scary in a different way.
Yeah. It's still emotionally scary, but I don't know. It has this more of this kind of anxious quality to it.
Yeah. I mean, I think that, like, one of the things I've been thinking about a lot lately is how, like, we've become this, like, economy of freelancers. Everybody's kind of, you know, getting by on small jobs, cobbling things together. What happens if you get sick and you can't, like, do your TaskRabbit errands? Or it creeps me out.
Jessica, you mentioned TaskRabbit. There's another company called Mechanical Turk, which basically lets you be a freelancer and do kind of menial data processing things, like be a moderator on Facebook and remove inappropriate photos for 3.5 hours a day or however long you want to. And between that and, like, the TaskRabbit thing of paying people to mow your lawn, it kind of feels like this weird kind of, like, post-Marxist dystopian thing where you, like, no one has a job, but everyone's working.
Everyone's working, and then they're trying, you know, in their off time to do the thing that's going to make them as rich as, like, their boss at
Right, which is a super long shot, you know,
right.
thing. And we probably would all be better off if we just had, like, a salary and health care.
I want to talk about a big corporate story of the week, which is Burger King, run by a 33-year-old.
Really?
Tim Hortons, the Canadian, I guess we can call it, what, a Canadian Dunkin' Donuts with, you know, sorry Canadians, maybe coffee that's not as strong?
That sounds about right.
Okay. Is this a corporate inversion where a company goes overseas to pay lower taxes, or is this strategy because Burger King wants to grow in other places?
The first question, it is technically an inversion, but it's not really one that will help Burger King save a lot on taxes because they still have to pay U.S. taxes on all of the business that they do in the U.S. It's not like a pharmaceutical company that can all of a sudden, you know, lease its patent to a U.K.-based company that then sells it to a Bermuda shell, that kind of a thing. So,
yeah, a lot of politicians are really angry about this. I can't tell if that feels just totally misplaced, if that's just kind of a fig leaf
to yell. I think that they should look at it like, we're actually encroaching on Canada, finally. We're going to take it over. It's the beginning of the colonialization process.
Of Canada. Yeah.
Take it back. A lot of space up there.
Yeah.
The one place that this will benefit Burger King from a tax perspective, and this reporter at BuzzFeed, Matt Zeitlin, did a really good piece on this, is future overseas growth will be taxed at a rate of either the Canadian rate or the local rate in the country, because Canada has these, like, bilateral tax agreements.
And Canada's rate is a little over 26%, but we should point out that, like, most big companies, Burger King included, do not really pay the nominal tax rate here in the U.S. They pay an effective tax rate, which is a lot lower.
Yes. So General Electric made headlines a little while ago, a year or so ago, for basically paying no U.S.
They paid nothing. Yeah.
No U.S. taxes for years and years. And they even referred to their tax accounting department as a profit center, which is probably not a good strategy from a public relations perspective.
Yeah, but they should call it a nonprofit.
But it was, exactly. But it was, in fact, what they were doing. It was an accurate description.
I want to bring up my one favorite weird story of the week, which is a huge bank in Russia, the biggest bank in Russia, is lending cats, apparently, to people who take out mortgages. Because, according to the newspaper, there is some superstition that if you have a cat walk through your new home before you move in, it brings you good luck. I don't know.
where do the cats come from is a good question. And they actually come from employees of the bank. So it's really the bank taking risk, lending out its own cats.
Do you get a stipend for owning a cat?
Sounds like a former finance guy.
But, you know, everyone...
You're quantifying this as risk.
Everyone says that banks should take, you know, that if, you know, they should have, you know, skin in the game and all that kind of thing. And these people are really putting...
Fur in the game?
Putting their cats on the line.
Ben Walsh from Reuters, Jessica Pressler from New York Magazine. Thanks to you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.